ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For stories that hook you in.
The twists and turns, it's like a movie or a TV miniseries.
For stories that fire you up.
Tonight, Victoria, to do away with good character references.
It was gut-wrenching to listen to that podcast.
And change the world you live in.
This is why we will be bringing legislation to the Parliament.
Search Background Briefing Podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Alan Kohler here with That's Business. Now, as we know, AI is taking the world by storm. It's clearly one of the greatest technological revolutions in history. And it's taking many forms, doing research, writing software code, helping to run businesses, and just chatting. And nobody really knows the extent to which it will disrupt employment and replace human workers. One area that it's likely to be quite disruptive is voice, specifically answering the phone and dealing with customers. The work that's currently being done by the millions of people who work in call centres around the world. And there are now a lot of startups pitching AI solutions to companies that use call centres. One of them, based in San Francisco, is called Phonely AI and was started 3 years ago by a young Melbourne University graduate, Wilbo Davis. I spoke to him from his home in California, and just to make it more interesting, I also spoke to his product, Phonely AI, just to see what it sounds like and how smart it is. So here's Wilbo Davis, the CEO of Phonely AI. Well, Wilbo Davis, thanks for joining us on That's Business.
Yeah, super glad to be here.
Now, Will, it seems to me that a voice AI assistant like yours are about the most kind of direct human worker replacement versions of AI, replacing human call centres, of course. And a recent report said that the number of people employed in call centres worldwide is about 18 million people. And most people say that AI voice assistants will add to call centres rather than replace them. Is that what you're saying?
So I think that there's probably somewhere in the middle there that's true. From what we're seeing with a lot of our customers, most of where voice AI ad is right now is assisting in parts of businesses that are very repetitive or don't require a lot of stuff. So I think that one thing for me that's really important is like building something that really adds value to the world and makes the world a better place. And so what we see is that a lot of what contact centers and what call centers are is very repetitive workforce with really, really high turnovers. And so I think that what voice AI is going to be able to do is it's going to be able to eliminate some of the repetitive kind of like low value work and allow people to be able to focus on more of the complicated problems as a whole, rather than just diving in, answering the exact same question over and over again. My thought is that the AI is going to be able to really automate that. And that's what we're seeing with a lot of our customers today, is it's not replacing the really complicated things. It's more of on the shorter workflows.
Briefly, can you give me a quick outline of what types of businesses are looking to use something like your service? Can you give me some examples of them?
Yeah, we work a lot in like insurance, in healthcare, home services. A lot of the areas that we're working on are that initial like lead capture side. So maybe that's like on a billboard or a phone number on a website. When you have somebody that's calling in and you want to maybe book an appointment or qualify a customer, Phonely is landing really, really well there.
On your website, it says, in just 5 minutes, learn how Phonely's AI, a phone assistant, sets the industry standard for businesses that want to have 100% of their calls answered by voice AI agents. 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's a couple things that I want to like think through there. First things first is part of the like AI industry and part of where we're at is like you can have 100% of AI answer your phone, but that doesn't mean that like if somebody leaves a wallet in your restaurant, that AI agent is going to be the best suited place for it, right? And so what we see is like AI agents are very capable. They're able to do a lot of different things, including like all the automations interfacing with your systems. But I don't think that like our goal and what we're building here is like, oh, we want to replace all humans. Our goal and what we're building here is like, we want to advance technology in the same ways that, the computer advanced the technology and what was created out there in the world. And so while yes, voice AI's agents can do that, I think that there's like always going to be a place for humans to still be in the loop and still be valuable.
Yeah, but you'll replace some humans, right? I mean,
yeah.
What do you think? Out of the 18 million in call centers around the world, how many of those people get replaced?
So I don't think like replace is the right word to use on that. It's like doing different things, right? And so for, if you look back in at every stage in history, like people, yeah, maybe they're not doing the same job that they were before. Like if you look back, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, we had people sitting in rooms that were calculators. Their job was to do math problems, and then they would come up with a result, right? And I don't think that anybody looks back at the advent of a calculator, like the inventation of a calculator, and says, hey, this was really bad for society. What happens was like people, they resurface and they do different skills. And so where we're at with AI is that, yes, it's going to be disruptive. That is part of what change is, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be bad, right? And so while there will not be 18 million people that work in call centers going forward, that doesn't mean that there will be 18 million people that are out of a job. That means that there's 18 million different opportunities for them to go into different areas to use artificial intelligence to make them more valuable.
So what's your pitch to potential customers, businesses that you're trying to sell Phonely to? What sort of cost reduction do you say they'll get, and what sort of reduced waiting times?
Yeah, for sure. So waiting times is zero. AI agent is going to pick up the phone immediately. It's going to be able to talk in multiple different languages. It's going to be able to integrate with your software, your tools, your systems. So APIs, calendars, all that stuff, it can connect with it. But really the big value that we see on businesses, and one of the things that a lot of businesses don't understand about AI and voice AI agents yet, is that you can really optimize them to be really, really, really good at things. And so a lot of businesses are using their phones as a source of leads. So they want to book more appointments, they want to get more business. And with a voice AI agent, you can actually optimize every piece of that interaction so that it enables that person on the phone to be able to get connected and get the service that they want. And so what we do with a lot of businesses is we help them capture opportunities that they may not have always been able to get. So that might be out of hours or when there's multiple people that are calling at the same time. A solution like Phonely is going to be able to allow them to capture all those leads and then boost their business up over where it was before.
Right. And what about cost reduction? Do you pitch that?
Yeah, cost reduction, usually what we're seeing is between 70 and 80% in terms of like overall, if you look at the actual dollar sign per appointment booked, as an example.
And where does that cost reduction come from?
Cost reduction comes from a few different ways. Like number one, like, hey, if you're using an outsourced answering service, if we're talking about the after hours use case, number two is it's like if there's specific workflows that, you want to automate on the calendar side, or number three, it's like, hey, maybe some of the staff is not like on before. I mean, there is like definitely that human reduction that people do have as well.
Right. And a challenge for you, I think, has been getting your latency down during the call. How hard was that to fix, and what have you got it to? Do you think you can get it to zero so it sounds entirely conversational?
So I don't think zero is where we're looking for. So zero is not what humans have. Like humans have about 600 milliseconds of latency in every single conversation. So it's definitely been a very, very hard challenge to get it to where we're at now. And the reason for that is that there's a lot of external services that are happening. So we're calling API systems that are on different services in different parts of the world. And so like putting those all in the same place and making sure that we meet the demand with the supply are able to forecast that was a pretty good challenge. But right now we're like between 500 milliseconds and a second, depending upon what voices you use, what transcription models that you use. And so for most folks, it's very human-like.
Right, so your latency is about the same as a human.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. This might be a good moment to call Phonely and just check it out. What do you think?
Yeah, let's go for it.
So we've got it. You guys have sorted out. You've created a fake telecommunications company that Phonely will pretend to be representing. So just so everyone knows, and I'll put it on speaker so everyone can hear it.
Opstra, Australia's leading telecommunications provider. For quality and training purposes, this call may be recorded. How can I help you today?
My internet doesn't work. Well, can you help me troubleshoot that?
No worries, mate. Let's get that sorted. First up, can I grab your full name?
Alan Kohler.
All right, Alan. So before we kick off the troubleshooting, could you quickly tell me the email address linked with your Opstra account?
Oh, ak@obstra.com.
Stoked, Alan. That's all the info I need for verification, just to make sure I heard you right. Your email is ak@ulster.com, yeah?
Yeah, that'll do. So, look, what's wrong with my internet? Come on.
All right. Reckon we've got everything for verification now. So, next up, what kind of internet modem or router have you got set up at home?
Mr. Obster, I'm a bit sick of this. Let's move on. Can I pay my bill with you?
No worries, Alan. She'll be right. You can absolutely pay your bill here. So just to keep things above board, could you confirm your date of birth for me one more time?
20th of the 6th, 1980. All right. Okay, I'm going to hang up now. But I could, if I wanted to, pay my bill with you.
All good, Alan. If you ever do want to pay your bill, you can do it with me here, easy as.
Righto.
All you'd need is your name, your Obstra details, and your date of birth to get started. Anything else you want to suss out while we're on the line?
No, that's all. Thanks very much. See ya.
Easy as, Alan. Have a good arvo. Catch you next time, mate.
Wow. All the mate and arvo and she'll be right, all that stuff. That's amazing.
Yeah, we had to throw in some additional Australian slang. So for that example there, we just kind of pulled something together. It wasn't really based off of a real, example. But
is that the way, if you had sold Phonely to Telstra, I don't know if you had or not, but if Telstra was a customer of yours, would that be what the call would be like?
Yeah, I mean, we would actually put in the actual flow and the steps that were required there. For this, it was like gather some information about your details and then move you on to the next stage. So if it was a real use case for like Telstra or Obstrum, we would be making API requests into their system to actually verify this information and then moving on to stages past that point.
Right. And it is possible for someone to just talk to the AI and pay their bill, right? And to read out their credit card number. Is that the way it would work?
Yeah, absolutely. You can do that as well. For that, we transfer to like a secure environment where none of that information is being recorded. So we're not storing any of the credit card details that can actually go and process that.
And I guess there's no kind of menu where you press one for this and two for that and so on.
That's the idea. It's like most people, when they call in, they hate that. And so our goal is to get rid of that process and make it feel as natural as possible.
Yeah, right. And I mean, you are basically trying to make people think that they're talking to a human being, right? I mean, is that the aim?
Yeah, the goal for us is to make it as absolutely natural as possible when talking to an AI.
Do you think it's a bit deceptive? Do you think that should be, when he says at the start, this could be recorded, this call might be recorded or is being recorded for training purposes or whatever, that you should be saying, and by the way, you're talking to an AI assistant, not a human being. Do you think that is something you should say?
I think that's a regulation kind of question. So the reason why we don't say that by default is because people are used to interacting with AI systems that are horrible and that don't work and you have to press this for this and you're always just trying to get to a person. And so we don't say that up front simply because people haven't experienced a true conversational AI agent that has full context. And so we want them to make sure that they get a good experience. But I hope that as regulation comes out, that information is being disclosed so you don't have like any fraud or anything like that occurring and people call up an AI and they're like, great, this is going to help me. But people's sentiment needs to change first.
All right. So what are you saying? That you would hope that regulation requires you to tell people that it's AI? Is that what you're saying?
My hope is that AI continues to get adopted. And when people call in, they actually prefer speaking with an AI. So they don't immediately say, I want to talk to a person because they've had bad experiences before.
Right.
And so I would hope that like regulation follows that because I think that is like the government's like, we shouldn't be deceived as consumers of who we're talking to, but we should have the option to get a good experience when we call into a business.
Well, why don't you just do it yourself rather than wait for regulation? I mean, so that you're not deceiving people.
Well, we want to have our customers want to have the best experience possible, right? We want our customers to have the best experience possible. And so if they've never interacted with a voice AI agent and it's a better experience for them to, not admit that at the very front of the call, we're going to like allow them to have the best experience for their businesses. Because it's not like our job to dictate how they have an experience with their customers. And if you were to ask it would obviously have say like, yeah, this is an AI agent.
Yeah, right. Because I did ask when I called it before, I did ask, am I talking to an AI? And it said, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Can I just get a bit of your backstory? You started this, you were at Melbourne University, I think 3 years ago, decided to start the business. Why did you do that?
Yeah, I was in my PhD doing artificial intelligence research. And to me, so my dad ran a small business. He was a veterinarian. And to me, it was like, it was his biggest problem, like hiring people, having people available after hours to answer the phone. And he was losing out on like tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars on missed opportunities and missed phone calls. And so what I honestly started this to do was to provide him a solution that he could use. And I looked in the market 3 years ago and the term voice AI didn't even exist. And so I started pulling together these APIs, these different tools, and started building a platform around it. And then really just kind of fell in love with the problem and the software, because it's an incredibly, incredibly technical problem to solve. You have to solve software, you have to solve machine learning, and you have to solve how to make something talk and feel like a person. And that's a really, really hard thing to do. And I love solving hard problems. And so it just has become a lot of fun.
How did you go about building it? Did you base it on ChatGPT or something, or did you build your own large language model?
Yeah. So when we started, we were building it off of like OpenAI and some of the other models out there. And then as we've gotten better understanding, we actually realized that these LLMs were trained to like write code and to, you know, chat, but they weren't really good at conversing like a person. And so we've been working on and we've been building our own LLMs that are very specific at talking like a person. They're not very good at coding. They're not very good at agentic workflows, but they're really good at talking like a person and following the internal process that we've built in our platform with Infonly.
Isn't it possible that the general LLMs like Claude and ChatGPT are getting, well, they're getting better all the time. At some point, because I mean, Anthropic's just released Claude Fable number 5,
yep,
which is meant to be a Mythos level, you know, very, very powerful 10 trillion parameter LLM. So, I mean, either it or maybe the next one is going to be able to do what you do. So the companies that your customers won't need to buy a specialist AI assistant, a voice AI assistant, they'll be able to just use Claude or something.
Yeah, so thought about this a lot. There's twofold reasons why we build our own models. Number one is latency. So Anthropic has some of the worst latency on the market from any model. It'll take 4, 5, 6, 10, 15 seconds for them to come back with an answer. And then number two is it's the way that the models are getting so good because they're agentic, right? So they're calling one model to call another model to call a tool to call something else. But that does not work for a phone call, because a phone call, you need an answer in that 500 milliseconds time. And so what we've done is we've been building out our ecosystem to like allow an AI agent to have those agentic abilities, but to talk fast. And then the other thing that we're not really worried about, like a big LLM coming in and like eating our lunch, if you will, is because there's so much data in a phone call that you want to know. So you want to know where customers are hanging up, where customers are feeling frustrated, where information is wrong, and you want to show that to the user. And so having some harness around that to be like, here's your performance metrics, here's how many appointments that you're booking, here's how much revenue that you've made from Phonely off of sales, like all that type of stuff. We want to be that. And as models continue to get better, obviously, as a company, we'll be able to slot in the best solution out there. We just haven't seen that the LLMs, the large labs, have produced a quality product yet.
And how do you charge? Is it simply as a software as a service? Is that what you're doing, as a subscription for a company?
It's primarily tied to like a minutes, like a usage-based model. So similar to, you know, like how OpenAI, you use API tokens. For us, it's a call minute. So how many minutes Phonely's talking on the phone, that's how much you're getting charged for.
And do you have to pay an LLM for tokens, or are you generating your own AI tokens?
Yeah, we run like all of that ourselves. So if the customer doesn't see any of that billing, they just pay a fixed price for the minutes that they use with Phonely. And then, yeah, obviously we have our other sub processes and services and fees that we pay for compute and all those things.
I imagine there are other voice AI assistant businesses having started up. I mean, you said that when you started there 3 years ago, there was none, but I imagine there's more now. So when you pitch at a company to get their business, how many are you pitching against?
There's quite a few. It's been a very interesting space, because the way that we think about it is there's about 5 or 6 good competitors on the market, folks that started around the time that we did and have built out all the different features that are actually required to answer the phone, because there's a lot of telephony that's involved. There's a lot of integration stuff. There's a lot of, like, there's so much involved. So about 5 or 6 good ones. And then there's like 1,000 other people that are just white labeling other products and putting a wrapper around something that really doesn't work. And so like to solve the problem at scale is actually really hard. To get a demo set up and running is pretty easy. And so there's like 5 companies that we think that work up against them is like, all right, it's going to be a good fight.
Right. And what are you finding is the secret or the key to winning winning a job, winning a customer? Is it price? I mean, is it price or what?
For us, it's usually not price. I think for us, it's just like showing them the features that we have. So things like A/B testing don't exist anywhere else in the ecosystem, where you can like A/B test one accent versus another and understand what the agent is good at or isn't. And then we're very metrics focused. And so where we come in is some business is like, cool, this is my business. This is how we're operating. We're going to come in and say, okay, our job is to match your existing metrics. And here's the dashboard where you can track all of that. So for customers that really care about like the numbers behind the AI agent and realize that every phone call is a dollar sign of potential value for their business, we almost always win those deals. For folks that are like in industries where it's, hey, maybe it's not super defined, that's when it's a little bit more up in the air.
And how many languages have you got? Have you got like Albanian or something?
We support, I think, 50 or so different languages, but we've been primarily focusing in like English, Spanish, like the big ones, just because the problem is like transcription models aren't as good in those languages. So the word error rate of it getting, certain details wrong is much higher there.
Just back on the human replacement angle, is it possible that what happens is that the humans that end up continuing to work in this kind of field, in call centers and that, are the more skilled ones because they're the ones, that end up with the complicated questions that can't be answered by phonely, and that the people who actually get replaced eventually are the kind of the entry level, the lower skilled ones, the lower paid ones. Is that where we're heading? I mean, because this has all just started, right? I mean, we're talking 5 years down the track.
Yeah, I would say that's probably generally correct. Like the way that the industry is moving as a whole is it's saying like starting by replacing the simpler tasks. But that being said, like I'll put a caveat on that, like a simple task to a human may not be a simple task to an AI. So as an example of a really easy task for a human, but a really hard task for an AI is when somebody calls in and then they maybe need to transfer to another department or call somebody else while they put that person on hold, get some information, take that information, relay it back to a person. For an AI to do that, it's doable. It just requires a lot more workflow than what a person would have to do. And so there's certain situations where it's like, yeah, it's just going to make more sense to have people working in those roles rather than AI.
And what does Phonely do with an angry customer? Does it send the angry customer to a human being, or does it try to deal with it?
So a lot of our platform is very configurable. So you can set up the way that you would want to handle it. Primarily what we see working in the industry is allow them to say, hey, this is the fastest way to get to help, if that is indeed the truthful case, and then transfer them to a human. So we can absolutely do that.
Is there potentially a psychological problem that the humans working in the business end up dealing with all the angry people and they kind of end up burning out or something?
We don't see that much angry people like on it. Really what it is it's like Phonely has been set up for a specific use case. And then if it's outside of that use case, it's getting transferred over, right? So we don't see like people going through, like if we know that it's not in our use case, we're not gonna try to solve something that's not something that we've built. We're just gonna pass it over to a human. So we don't see as much of that like frustration angle. It's more of just like, can it do it or can't it do it?
Yeah, fair enough. And are you profitable yet? Are you getting customers and making money?
Yeah, we've got quite a few customers, not profitable. We are in a very high growth phase. And so we're just raised our Series A funding and have been deploying a lot of that capital to scale quickly.
So what's your time frame on getting profitable?
We are kind of like the venture capital model. Like for us, we're trying to grow as big as we can, make as much of an impact as we can. And so for us, we're forecasting like growth at a lot of cost. So we know that we have multiple different investment rounds past this. Obviously, we're trying to be cautious of our money, but our plan is to not be profitable for several years as we continue to grow out the business. Obviously, at any point in the organization, we can take a different path and we can change things, but we're like grow as fast as we can, as much as we can, and kind of go from there.
What do you think of the mega public floats coming up? Well, SpaceX has kind of happened already, and Anthropic and OpenAI. Do you think they're going to cause a bit of a indigestion in the investment capability for AI?
It's interesting. I think that it has probably turned investors' appetite more to AI, right? All of these big companies out there, like if I was an investor and I saw a $1 trillion valuation in only a few years, I would be pretty interested in looking at whatever that industry is to think like, oh, wow, you know, that can happen again. So for us, we've seen like, I think it's going to be a hot market for a while. Artificial intelligence is, it's like, it's not going anywhere. It's providing a ton of value. And I think a lot of question out there is like, is it a bubble or is it not a bubble? For the most part, we still believe like we're not in a bubble yet. Like a lot, we can provide a lot of value to businesses, and it's not like silly money that's being thrown. It's like serious, you know, serious business problems that we're solving.
What, by the way, what's your valuation in the Series A round?
Yeah, so we didn't like officially disclose it, but we like over $115 million US was what we had put out. So
yeah, and you got that?
Yep. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Congratulations. In 3 years, it's not bad.
Yeah.
And do you think there's a risk that in developing systems like these, which might be of benefit to businesses and maybe even government systems, that it makes it a sleeker and better developed system for scams to operate?
I think that there's, I think so. I think there's always that risk, right? I think that part of that is going to fall onto like outbound calling is primarily where we see a lot of the scams that are happening, but it definitely does like, it definitely does make that infrastructure easier as we continue to do that. So I would agree that, yeah, there's still going to be that negative side of it.
Right. So we could have AI voice assistants that do multiple thousands, millions of outbound calls and sound like human beings.
Yep. And I think that like we've seen some of that in the US, and part of what it is like it falls onto, you know, businesses such as myself, but then also regulation to make sure that that's not happening. So for us, it's like we've got pretty advanced fraud detection. If anyone starts using our platform for anything that is, you know, illegal or really immoral, like we immediately shut it off. And so the nice thing about like large language models and what we can do with that is at scale, we can really monitor all of our customers and pull down the bad stuff. And so I think that there is some regulation, there is some risk around it. And it's a necessary thing that we should all like work towards solving.
Just finally, there's a bit of a backlash against AI being kind of led by Pope Leo. Do you think that's a risk for businesses like yours as well?
So I think that people are always afraid of change. Like at every moment in human history, we've done a lot of change. Like if you had 20 years ago for us to be having this conversation, you're in Australia, I'm in San Francisco, it is like is a crazy thing. And so there's always going to be resistance to change. But I think that if we look back on society, like change has brought a lot of good into the world. And I think that artificial intelligence will be able to do the same thing. And my goal personally as a founder and as a human being and a citizen of the world is like, I'm not doing this because I really care about money at all. My kind of goal with what we're building here is that there's a lot of people out there, you know, doing robotic jobs. And the way that I think about it is like, you know, how do we create a world in which human beings can have jobs that we're not training them to be robots, we're teaching them to be people. And a lot of the way that the world works is just systems that we've designed ourselves to make sense of kind of our existence. And I think that as a human species is not going anywhere. We will continue to find new ways to give ourselves meaning and value. And there is going to be change. There is going to be short-term pain. But if I believed that I was contributing to something that was detrimental to humanity, I would not be doing it.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Wilbo Davis. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks so much, Alan. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for joining me on That's Business. You can find That's Business every Friday on the ABC Business Daily feed. And so you don't miss out, make sure you follow ABC Business Daily to find us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're a fan of what we're making, please tell a friend about us and where to find us. Carrington Clark and the ABC Business Daily team will be back in the feed on Monday.